Hello and welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Nonpareil on this Wednesday, January 20th. I'm your reader, Wally Helms. Let's take a look at the story on the front page. Back to Biz program helps local small businesses. This is reported by Sam Pimper of the Nonpareil, a collaborative effort between Advanced Southwest Iowa Corporation and several community partners has enabled small business owners in Pottawatomie County to receive information and much-needed safety supplies during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Coined the Back to Biz PPE initiative, small businesses with 25 or fewer employees have been eligible to receive face masks and locally sourced sanitizer, multi-purpose sanitizing product, provided information shows. The program was jump-started in summer 2020 when funding was provided through the Iowa West Foundation, Pottawatomie County Community Foundation, and the Southwest Iowa Foundation. Other local partners are the City of Council Bluffs, the Council Bluffs Area Chamber of Commerce, and America's SBDC, Iowa. Since its inception, the program has assisted somewhere in the ballpark of 100 businesses, according to Pottawatomie County Public Health Director Matt Wyant. In addition to receiving personal protective equipment provided free of charge after meeting eligibility requirements and approval, participating businesses have been able to capitalize on receiving an assortment of information about the coronavirus and how to safely navigate a proprietorship during a pandemic. Providing this type of resource has been valuable to business owners, Wyant said. Around the August time frame, when it was a little hard to get PPE, still hand sanitizer was still key and still is with a lot of things, we wanted a way with all of the new programs coming out to help small businesses, and with all of the guidances coming down regarding reopening, some businesses were struggling and wanting some clarification, he said. And we wanted a kind of non-confrontational way for the health department to be able to help them out, understand the guidances, and look to us more as a partner in it rather than as someone who might be saying they were doing something wrong. Wyant said Back to Biz partners still meet every 2 weeks to discuss COVID-19 protocols and other information that they may need to be relayed to local business owners. Though applications have slowed down a bit, those interested and who qualify can fill out an application by going online to councilbluffsiowa.com/news and clicking on the Back to Biz program icon. It has wound down, but it is still ongoing. Some boxes of masks and hand sanitizer are still being handed out to small businesses, Wyant said. At the bottom of the front page, we have an Associated Press story. Shameful COVID-19 death toll tops 400,000 in U.S. This is reported by Adam Geller and Janie Haar of the Associated Press. As President Donald Trump entered the final year of his term last January, the U.S. recorded its first confirmed case of COVID-19. Not to worry, Trump insisted. His administration had the virus totally under control. Now, in his final hours in office, after a year of presidential denials of reality and responsibility, the pandemic's U.S. death toll has eclipsed 400,000, and the loss of lives is accelerating. This is just one step on an ominous path of fatality, said Dr. Erwin Redlener, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University, and one of many public health experts who contend the Trump administration's handling of the crisis led to thousands of avoidable deaths. Everything about how it's been managed has been infused with incompetence and dishonesty, and we're paying a heavy price, he said. The 400,000 death toll reported Tuesday by Johns Hopkins University is greater than the population of New Orleans, Cleveland, or Tampa, Florida. It's nearly equal to the number of American lives lost annually to strokes, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, flu, and pneumonia combined. With more than 4,000 deaths recorded on some recent days, the most since the pandemic began, the toll by week's end will probably surpass the number of Americans killed in World War II. We need to follow the science, and the 400th death is shameful, said Cliff Daniels, Chief Strategy Officer for Methodist Hospital of Southern California near Los Angeles. With its morgue full, the hospital has parked a refrigerated truck outside to hold the bodies of COVID-19 victims until funeral homes can retrieve them. It's so incredibly, unimaginatively sad that so many people have died that could have been avoided, he said. President-elect Joe Biden, who will be sworn in on Wednesday, planned to take part in the evening ceremony Tuesday near the Lincoln Memorial in Washington to honor the 400,000 dead. The bell at the Washington National Cathedral was set to toll 400 times. Other cities around the U.S. planned tributes as well. The U.S. accounts for nearly one of every five virus deaths reported worldwide, far more than any other country despite its great wealth and medical resources. The coronavirus would almost certainly have posed a grave crisis for any president given its rapid spread and power to kill, experts on public health and government said. But Trump seemed to invest as much in battling public perceptions as he did in fighting the virus itself, repeatedly downplaying the threat and rejecting scientific expertise while fanning conflicts ignited by the outbreak. As president, he was singularly positioned to counsel Americans. Instead, he used his pulpit to spout theories, refuted by doctors, that taking unproven medicines or even injecting household disinfectant might save lives from the virus. The White House defended the administration this week, said White House spokesman Judd Deer, "We grieve every single life lost through this pandemic, and thanks to the president's leadership, Operation Warp Speed has led to the development of multiple safe and effective vaccines in record time, something many said would never happen." With death spiraling in the New York City area last spring, Trump declared war on the virus, but he was slow to invoke the Defense Production Act to secure desperately needed medical equipment. When then he sought to avoid responsibility for the shortfalls, saying that the federal government was merely a backup for governors and legislatures. "I think it is the first time in history that a president has declared a war and we have experienced a true national crisis and then dumped responsibility for it on the states," said Drew Altman, president of the Kaiser Family Foundation, a health care policy think tank. When the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention tried to issue guidelines for reopening in May, Trump administration officials held them up and watered them down. As the months passed, Trump claimed he was smarter than the scientists and belittled experts like Dr. Anthony Fauci, the governor's top authority on infectious diseases. "Why would you bench the CDC, the greatest fighting force of infectious disease in the world? Why would you call Tony Fauci a disaster?" asks Dr. Howard Markle, a medical historian at the University of Michigan. "It just doesn't make sense." As governors came under pressure to reopen state economies, Trump pushed them to move faster, asserting falsely that the virus was fading. "Liberate Minnesota," he tweeted in April as angry protesters gathered at the state capitol to oppose the Democratic governor's stay-at-home restrictions. "Liberate Michigan." In Republican-led states like Arizona that allowed businesses to reopen, hospitals and morgues filled with virus victims. It led to the tragically sharp partisan divide we've seen in the country on COVID, and that has fundamental implications for where we are now, because it means the Biden administration can't start over, Altman said. They can't put the genie back in the bottle. In early October, when Trump himself contracted COVID-19, he ignored safety protocols, ordering up a motorcade so he could wave to supporters outside his hospital. Once released, he appeared on the White House balcony to take off his mask for the cameras, making light of health officials' pleas for people to cover their faces. We're rounding the corner, Trump said, of the battle with the virus during a debate with Biden in late October. It's going away. It isn't. U.S. deaths from COVID-19 surpassed 100,000 in late May, then tripled by mid-December. Experts at the University of Washington project deaths will reach nearly 567,000 by May 1st. More than 120,000 patients with the virus are in the hospital in the U.S., according to COVID Tracking Project, twice the number who filled wards during previous peaks. On a single day last week, the U.S. recorded more than 4,400 deaths. While vaccine research funded by the administration as part of Warp Speed has proved successful, the campaign trumpeted by the White House to rapidly distribute and administer millions of shots has fallen well short of the early goals officials set. Young people are dying, young people who have their whole lives ahead of them, said Mawata Kamara, a nurse at California's San Leandro Hospital, who is furious over the surge in COVID-19 cases that have overwhelmed healthcare workers. We could have done so much more. Many voters considered the federal government's response to the pandemic a key factor in their vote. 39% said it was the single most important factor, and they overwhelmingly backed Biden over Trump, according to AP VoteCast. But millions of others stood with him. Here you have a pandemic, said Eric Desenhall, a Washington crisis management consultant, yet you have a massive percent of the population that doesn't believe it exists. The article is concluded with a local report on an update on the coronavirus cases, and I'll just mention some of the highlights of that. Pottawatomie County has a positivity rate over the last 14 days of 13.8%, which represents a slight dip. Mills County has a 14-day positivity rate of 9.8%. Harrison County, 14.8%. Pottawatomie County Public Health Director Matt Wyant said the county administered 826 first or prime doses of Moderna COVID-19 vaccine on Saturday. The county will administer second or booster doses today, tomorrow, for those that received their first dose at clinics on December 23 and December 24. He said the county is wrapping up Phase 1A vaccinations. The state has said it will move into Phase 1B, which includes individuals 75 and older, individuals with disabilities living in home settings, correctional facilities, other congregate settings, meatpacking plant workers, inspectors responsible for health, life, and safety, as well as government officials, including staff. Still with the front page, we have Cindy Gonzalez reporting for the Omaha World Herald. Bluffs native Ted Selden worked to leave his mark on area real estate. Well into his 80s, Ted Selden was a regular at area real estate seminars and events, garnering admiration from up and coming peers hoping to make their own mark on the Omaha area landscape. The co-founder of the Selden Company made a point to visit and get first-hand feedback from residents and shoppers representing the thousands of homes and commercial enterprises he helped develop. Indeed, say friends and family, Selden was on the phone and involved in business decisions up to nearly the day he died last week at age 89. I don't know that you could ever say Ted retired, said Bob Dean, former president of Selden Company. He was very diligent about how his property was presented to the public and how he treated customers and residents. Selden died of natural causes Saturday at his Omaha home, surrounded by family, including his wife of 64 years, Sarah, and daughters Stephanie and Beth. Stephanie Howard said that her dad was devoted to family and forever boasted about Council Bluffs, his hometown, and Omaha, the multi-state company's headquarters. Perhaps Selden's most recognized work is the transformation of about 1,000 acres of farmland along the West Center Road corridor from 114th to 136th Streets into houses, apartments, professional buildings, and shopping and entertainment centers. A local commercial broker who grew up in one of those developments, Royalwood Estates, recalled living near Selden in the late 1960s and 70s and learning from him as the decades went on. He was hands-on, no matter how small or big a problem was, said Scott Moore of Omni Partners. A salt-of-the-earth gentleman, to him, a handshake was everything. On the Selden Company website, company leaders recalled Selden's relentless promotion of the 10-second look standard and the MBWA rule, management by wandering around, both aimed at ensuring top-notch property management. Selden was proud of the company's preservation projects, including the conversion of downtown Omaha's old Lerner retail building into the Limelight urban apartments and ground-level commercial space. Dean said Selden didn't like to tear down, yet colleagues and family agreed that Selden's most gratifying projects related to affordable housing, particularly for seniors. That was noted when he accepted awards, including the annual Housing Champion of the Nebraska Investment Finance Authority and the University of Iowa's Distinguished Alumni Achievement Award. He also was inducted into the Greater Omaha Chamber's Business Hall of Fame. The University of Nebraska at Omaha named the Ted M. Selden Commons in Mammal Hall in recognition of his support of the university's real estate program. Selden and his wife were honored as the 2015 Humanitarian of the Year by the Jewish Federation of Omaha. Alan Potash, who heads the foundation, recalled Selden's devotion to Livingston Plaza on the Jewish Community Center campus. He said Selden worked with federal housing officials to establish the apartments that were open to elders of all faiths and physically linked to an array of services at the JCC. Potash said Selden urged people to use the term affordable housing, saying he didn't want seniors to feel any less dignified for needing a federal subsidy. Selden Company's current president, Alicia Stormer Clark, said part of the Selden legacy is in careers launched and jobs provided. She said the company has about 600 employees currently. She said Selden first asked employees about family and then went on to business. He had a far-reaching impact, Clark said. He wanted to make sure we did things the right way. The article is accompanied by a picture of the deceased founder of the Selden Company, Ted Selden. In the very center of the front page, we have three colorful pictures presented by staff photographer Joe Shearer, and the big headline, Luck of the Draw. And of course, it's about Powerball and Mega Millions. And I'll read the captions. Above, a customer service representative, Denise Krohn, hands a Powerball and Mega Millions lottery ticket to a customer at the Madison Avenue Hy-Vee in Council Bluffs on Tuesday, January 19. Tonight's Powerball jackpot sits at $730 million. The biggest Powerball prize was a $1.58 billion jackpot won by three people in 2016. The odds of matching all numbers for Powerball is 1 in 292.2 million. Prizes are subject to federal taxes, and most states take a cut as well. The results of Tuesday night's Mega Millions drawing, with a jackpot of $865 million, weren't available at press time. The bottom left picture shows Ron Coffey, customer service manager at the Madison Avenue Hy-Vee in Council Bluffs, selling a Powerball and Mega Millions lottery ticket. And in the bottom right picture, Krohn rings up Powerball and Mega Million lottery tickets for a customer using her video display. And the final story on the front page has Mike Brownlee, reporting Strike a Chord names Cutler Littrell as honorary chairpeople. Kate Cutler and Boyd Littrell of Council Bluffs have been named honorary chairs for the 2021 Heartland Family Service Strike a Chord Gala. The annual event benefits Heartland Family Service programs in Southwest Iowa, including our K-12 therapeutic school for students with major mental health diagnoses, housing and support services for families experiencing homelessness, professional mental health counseling for children and their parents, and community preventive education and treatment for those struggling with substance abuse and problem gambling, according to the organization. Together we can center our neighbors' needs and break cycles of barriers, organizers said in a release. Heartland Family Service noted Kate Cutler and Boyd Littrell are both active in the Council Bluffs community. Cutler has served on the board of directors for the Iowa West Foundation, Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission, and Council Bluffs Habitat for Humanity, among others. She also has worked as an elementary school teacher and later returned to higher education to become a lawyer. Cutler strongly believes in basic human needs, especially adequate food, a stable place to live, medical services, and a voice to be heard, Strike a Chord organizers said in announcing Cutler as co-chair. Littrell is a sociologist and former Methodist minister who cares deeply about individuals and the communities in which they live. Heartland said in the release, he has a distinguished educational background, has taught at the University of Texas at Austin and at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Littrell has a special heart for the impoverished, underserved, or otherwise challenged, and seeks to give voice to them and to help them overcome conditions that hamper their capacity for change, organizers said. This year's Salute to Leadership Award recipient is Marie Nedler, who retired in February of 2019 as president of CHI Health Mercy Council Bluffs. Nedler began her service to the Southwest Iowa community at Mercy Hospital as an intensive care unit nurse and spent 47 years with the hospital. Heartland Family Service is proud to honor her for her tireless efforts to improve the lives of individuals, children, and families in Southwest Iowa, organizers said. The 2021 Heartland Family Service Strike a Chord Gala will be held at 6 p.m. on June 11 at the Mid-America Center in Council Bluffs. The theme is On Broadway. The evening will include a number of highlights, including the presentation of the Salute to Leadership and Salute to Achievement Awards, musical entertainment, silent and live auctions, a raffle, and games. Sponsorship opportunities are currently available. To become a sponsor, contact Development Manager Mitch McCartney at mccartney@heartlandfamily-service.org, or you may call 712-318-1765. On page 2, we have the face of the day, and this is written by and the photograph provided by Joe Shearer. The face of the day is of Desmond Parks. He's in a new school this year, but he's quickly become a part of the Franklin family. Desmond, 10, is a native of Council Bluffs and a fourth grader at Franklin Elementary School. Up until this school year, Desmond had been attending the nearby Edison Elementary School. A little more than halfway through his first year at his new school, Desmond said he's found his place. He said his teacher, Kara Tai, has been very welcoming, and he's been meeting lots of new friends. His little brother, third grader Jameson Parks, also attends Franklin, and Desmond said it's fun having a sibling close in age with him at school each week. It's cool. I like having my brother around every day, he said. Like many kids his age, Parks loves his recess period. And he said it's been nice having so much unseasonably warm weather lately so that his outdoor playtime hasn't been too chilly. Inside the classroom, Desmond is a numbers whiz, and he enjoys his math class. Desmond is an athlete, and he loves the game of basketball. He plays in a youth league now, and he said he is eager to compete as he gets older in middle school, high school, and perhaps beyond that. When he isn't busy with school or basketball practice, Desmond enjoys doing a little virtual hooping, playing entries in the NBA 2K series on his PlayStation 4. His team is the Boston Celtics, and he's always preparing for a championship season. Desmond is right at home at Franklin Elementary, and he's excited about what the next year or so holds before he heads off to middle school. And the article shows the picture of Desmond with a nice smiling face with his lowered black face mask, and he's wearing horn-rimmed glasses. On page 4, the Lifestyles page, we have Emily Schreib of the Nonpareil reporting, Kevin Wood brings Abraham Lincoln back to life at the library. A telepoem booth is making its way to the Council Bluffs Public Library, and to celebrate, the library will have poetry-focused events over the next few months. A telepoem booth is similar to a vintage phone booth, but instead of dialing a number to get a hold of someone, you dial a number to hear a poem. To start off the poetry events, Kevin Wood will portray Abraham Lincoln in Lincoln on Literature and the Theater on February 1st at 6:30 p.m. over Zoom. Wood is a first-person historical portrayer of Abraham Lincoln, according to a press release from the library. Those who attend will see Wood share Lincoln's enjoyment of literature. We'll share that. This will include how Lincoln was influenced by Shakespeare and poetry. Wood will share some of his own attempts at writing poetry, some humorous and others serious, said the release. As a young man, my height reached 6'3", and I also grew a beard. It was then that my resemblance to President Lincoln first began to come out, Wood said in the release. Still, it didn't occur to me until some years later to combine my love for history, my interest in Lincoln, my experience in public speaking, and my natural resemblance to Honest Abe. You can watch the presentation from home or at the library in Meeting Room B. The event is free, but masks are required for those who attend in person. Reservations must be made in advance at phone number 712-323-7553, extension 132. We have a brief story from the Associated Press, reported by Hillel Itali. Students write inaugural poems for poetry contest. This is from New York. Hallie Knight, a high school senior from Jacksonville, Florida, has some well-formed ideas about where the country is and how she'd like to see it change. The 17-year-old has won a contest organized by the Academy of American Poets, for which students under their own under 18 wrote their own inaugural poems in anticipation of Wednesday's swearing-in of President-elect Joe Biden. Applicants for the inaugural poem project were urged to submit work that reflects on the country's challenges, strengths, and hope for its future, according to guidelines. Knight says she wanted to acknowledge the greatness of the potential for our country at this present moment, and the opportunity we have as citizens to choose what it becomes out of all this chaos. Inspired by works ranging from W.H. Auden's As I Walked Out One Evening to Adrian Rich's Storm Warnings, Knight crafted a piece called To Rebuild that likens the U.S. to a house that has been severely but not hopelessly damaged. The work is not complete until the walls protect all who live there. No exceptions, abandonment of all unnecessary despair. Knight will receive $1,000, and her work, along with the poems of two runners-up, will be featured on Poets.org and in American Poets magazine. The official inaugural poem will be read during Wednesday's ceremony by Amanda Gorman, the country's first youth poet laureate. She is 22, just a few years older than Knight. She is proof to people of all ages, but especially those younger than she, that there is no need to wait to make an impact, Knight said. A former inaugural poet, Richard Blanco, served as judge for the contest finalists. Blanco said he was impressed by Knight's imagery, likening it to Abraham Lincoln's famous warning that a house divided against itself cannot stand. He added that he was taken by the level of craft Knight and others demonstrated, and by their remarkably unbroken idealism. Even after everything we've been through this past few years, they've not given up, says Blanco, who read at the 2013 inaugural of President Barack Obama. We don't want to sugarcoat what's going on and be a Hallmark kind of poem. We're looking for that balance of truth and hope. You are listening to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil on this Wednesday, January 20th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituaries. We have two obituaries today. Robert J., known as Bob Lang, age 72, of Omaha, passed away on Sunday, January 17, at Mercy Hospital in Council Bluffs. The celebration of life visitation on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Funeral Home with military honors at 6 p.m. Cremation to follow the visitation. The family will direct memorials on behalf of Robert J. Bob Lang, who died at the age of 72 on January 17 in Omaha. And our second obituary is John P. Churchman, age 92, passed away on January 18 in Council Bluffs at Bethany Lutheran Homes. Open visitation 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Thursday, January 21st, at the Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel. A funeral mass will be held on Friday, January 22nd, 10 a.m., St. Patrick Catholic Church on Valley View Drive, Council Bluffs, Interment Calvary Cemetery, Churchville, Iowa. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Patrick Church or St. Albert Schools on behalf of John P. Churchman, who died at the age of 92 on January 18th. He was from Council Bluffs. We turn to the sports page for high school wrestling story, reported by Austin Heinen of the Nonpareil. Titans earn bragging rights after winning city dual meet. Lewis Central took the crown at this year's City Wrestling Duels Tournament, extending their win streak at the event to 7 straight years on Tuesday at Thomas Jefferson High School. Lewis Central defeated St. Albert 48-24, Thomas Jefferson 72-6, and sealed the deal with a 57-18 win over Abraham Lincoln to take the city crown. Titans coach August Manns was very pleased with the team's performance and likes where his Titan team is at in the final stretch before postseason rolls around. The kids came out fired up and ready to wrestle, Manns said. The guys have been wrestling really well lately. It was good to see them continue that and make another step forward. We're already a month away from districts and state. I feel like we're moving in the right direction at the right time. As long as we keep taking those steps forward and everything, we'll be sitting good in a month. Brian Paul also won his 100th match of his career after his win over Abraham Lincoln's Aiden Keller, who knocked Paul out of the district tournament last season. The 100th win felt great, but Paul liked avenging his district defeat just as much. That match was a really important one to me, Brian Paul said. He got me in district, so I needed to get that one back, and I feel like I dominated that match. It felt good to win and to reach that milestone on top of it. The article concludes with long lists of those wrestling results in each weight category. And I will just read the results of what has been determined as the all-city wrestling team at each weight category. At 113, Zach Williams, St. Albert. At the 120 weight class, Tanner Wink, Lewis Central. At 126, Tabor Dominguez, Lewis Central. At 132, John Helton, St. Albert. 138, Brian Paul, Lewis Central. At 145, Zach Winslow, Lewis Central. 152, Jude Ryan, Abraham Lincoln. At 160, Braylon Comrand, Lewis Central. At 170, Cale McLaren, St. Albert. At 195, Ben O'Neill, St. Albert. At 220, Dylan Woods, Lewis Central. And at 285, Hunter Waldstein, Lewis Central. That's the all-city wrestling team, as mentioned in today's article. In high school boys swimming, Sioux City swims past Council Bluffs for dual victory. The Council Bluffs high school swimming team for boys hosted a home duel Tuesday, but it was the Sioux City Metro team that earned a 122-42 victory on Tuesday. The article then lists the top three entries in each of the various events of that swimming duel. We have a few basketball scores. First of all, in girls high school basketball, these games were played Tuesday night. Underwood defeated Missouri Valley 57-16. Audubon defeated Trainer 42-39. Denison Schleswig defeated Lewis Central 53-48. And IKM Manning defeated Riverside 64-25. Those were Tuesday's girls basketball scores. And in boys basketball Tuesday night, Missouri Valley at Underwood, it just mentions the time there, as it does at Audubon at Trainer, and there was no report for that, as well as for Lewis Central at Denison Schleswig. But we do have a score. It was Abraham Lincoln 71, Sioux City North 17. And this is in boys basketball, high school. And we have no report for College View at Heartland Christian in last night's game. And last night, Glenwood boys defeated St. Albert 58-50, and IKM Manning defeated Riverside in boys basketball last night 40-26. And we have staff photographer Joe Shearer offering another series of photos on local events. And this one's titled Demolition Continues. I'll read Joe's captions for the pictures he's taken. It says, above at left, a customer carries flowers out of the Madison Avenue Hy-Vee as demolition at Mall of the Bluffs continues in the background. Above at right, demolition at Mall of the Bluffs, which started in December, continues on Tuesday. And below, more demolition at the Mall of the Bluffs is seen. Mall of the Bluffs on Madison Avenue closed at the end of 2019 after a purchase agreement was made with Menard Incorporated, enabling the big box retailer to raise the enclosed mall and its related structures to erect a new building on the 48-acre parcel. And so you can expect, you can see in the background of each of the pictures, the shambles of demolition work going on. And there is perhaps the the landmark pyramid skylight still appearing above the rubble of that Mall of the Americas, Mall of the Bluffs, I'm sorry, that has been taken down. Let me conclude with a report from the Gazette Des Moines Bureau, Capital Digest, those who speed could see tougher penalty. This is, I'll read as much as this as we have time, a roundup of legislative and state government issues of interest for Tuesday, inheritance tax repeal, A Senate Ways and Means Subcommittee voted 3-0 Tuesday to remove Iowa from a list of 6 remaining states that impose an inheritance tax when someone dies who owned a farm, business, or had other assets. Long time overdue, said Senator Annette Sweeney, Republican, Alden, in support Senate Study Bill 1026, which would repeal Iowa's inheritance tax law effective July 1st. Iowa's current law imposes a maximum rate of 15%, but exempts children, biologically and legally adopted, stepchildren, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and other lineal descendants. Proponents of the repeal called the tax, quote, a real small business killer, especially in rural areas, unquote, while a lobbyist for a religious organization called it a, quote, fair tax, a needed tax, and an essential tax, unquote, that has an equalizing effect. Said Victoria Sinclair of Iowans for Tax Relief, it's time for Iowa to stop robbing the grave and taxing people after they're dead. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican, Council Bluffs, chairman of the Senate Ways and Means Committee, said he expected the concept to be incorporated into a larger tax policy legislative package to be taken up later this session rather than move as a standalone bill. Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat of Des Moines, said the repeal should take effect upon enactment rather than wait until July 1. SSB 1026 now moves to the full committee for consideration. Sensitive content. A bill creating a civil cause of action for the disclosure of private, sexually explicit images without consent moved forward Tuesday without opposition. SSB 31 applies to sensitive content created or obtained under circumstances in which a person had a reasonable expectation of privacy. According to the proposed legislation, which now goes to the full Public Safety Committee, a plaintiff could recover damages the greater of either economic or non-economic damages not to exceed $10,000, as well as an amount equal to any monetary gain made by the defendant and punitive damages. Only the Motion Picture Association registered in opposition, but its lobbyist said it had removed its objection. There was some discussion whether the 4-year statute of limitations in HSB 31 was appropriate. Health care recruitment. Graduates of Iowa Regents Universities and accredited private colleges would become eligible for loan repayment under House File 5, a bill that would expand the state health care professional recruitment program. Currently, only graduates of the Des Moines University Osteopathic Medical Center are eligible for help repaying their school loans if they practice in eligible rural communities. The program applies to physicians, physician assistants, podiatrists, and physical therapists. About $400,000 is appropriated to the program, said Representative Jacob Bossman, Republican from Sioux City. About 100 people used it last year. The Iowa Student Aid Commission estimates participation could double under the proposed legislation. Sexual activity clarification. A Senate Judiciary Subcommittee voted 3-0 Tuesday to advance 2 bills aimed at making it easier for prosecutors to convict offenders involved in committing sex acts against children. Senate Study Bill 1013 would amend definitions of a sex act or sexual activity in the Iowa Code to specify types of prohibited contact, excluding the course of a professional medical examination, to include more body parts and inappropriate circumstances. members of the Iowa County Attorneys Association and a representative of the Iowa Attorney General's office said the change is needed to protect children and close loopholes that are impeding the prosecution of crimes involving children. Questions were raised whether the language was so broad that it might cause problems for mall Santas or people bumping into other patrons at crowded bars, but proponents said that was not the intent. We're not trying to do some sweeping huge change and criminalize every single thing that happens in a bar or that sort of contact, said Kristen Formanek of the Story County Attorney's Office, she told subcommittee members. The legislative panel also forward a bill, Senate Study Bill 1014, to full committee that would standardize penalties for sex-related offenses involving victims 10, 12, and 13 years old. Tougher penalty for speeders. Drivers operating a motor vehicle at speeds topping the posted limit of 25 miles per hour or more could face up to 10 years in prison if they cause an accident that results in death under a bill that cleared a House subcommittee Tuesday. House Study Bill 5 would create a Class C felony for such instances where a driver is convicted of reckless driving while operating a vehicle at excessive speeds. Proponents noted that more than 1,000 citations were issued last year where vehicles were clocked in excess of 100 miles per hour on Iowa highways. Our high speed seems to go up and up and up, said Susan Cameron Damon, a lobbyist for the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association, who noted 69 people died in accidents involving excessive speed in 2020. Opponents countered that Iowa already has laws governing reckless driving and vehicular homicide that adequately address the offense. The House bill, which moves to the full Public Safety Committee for consideration, would exempt public safety agencies performing official duties. And the last item in that article, dry conditions remain in Iowa. State officials say drought and abnormally dry conditions remain across Iowa, with drought boundaries remaining status quo following a 2020 that ranked as the 36th driest year on record in Iowa. According to the latest water summary update issued Tuesday, statewide precipitation totaled slightly below normal at nearly a 1-inch average. Multiple winter systems moved through Iowa, leaving measurable snow statewide. In 2020, precipitation was below normal for 8 of the 12 months and was significantly below normal during July and August. Year-end precipitation totals showed a statewide average precipitation accumulation of 28.92 inches, 6.18 inches below normal. A drier year last occurred in 2012. Said Tom Hall, the State Department of Natural Resources Coordinator of Hydrology Resources, as Iowa moved from a very wet 2019 through a very dry 2020, many of our hydrologic conditions have deteriorated. There is concern for dryness and drought as we move from winter to spring of 2021, and the DNR and our partners are watching conditions closely. To review Iowa's water resource trends, you can go to iowadnr.gov/water summary update. And continuing with State House news, we have James Q. Lynch of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau reporting Iowa House panels advance gun abortion constitutional amendments. Constitution Day isn't until September 17. However, Tuesday was Constitutional Amendment Day at the Iowa Capitol, as proposals to let Iowans vote to create a state-level Second Amendment and reject a Supreme Court finding of a right to an abortion advance. Neither idea is new. The proposed amendment relating to the right of Iowans to keep and bear arms, House Study Bill 9, was approved by both chambers of the legislature in the previous General Assembly. If approved this year, it could go to voters in 2022. HSB 41, which calls for amending the Iowa Constitution to say it does not recognize, grant, or secure a right to abortion or require the public funding of abortion, was approved by the Senate last year, but failed in the House. If approved this year and again by the 2023-25 General Assembly, it would go to the voters. A House Judiciary Subcommittee heard from several abortion opponents who argued that Iowa voters, not unelected Supreme Court justices, should determine what regulations to place on abortion. Radical judges took that right away from Iowans with a 2018 decision that found the state constitution included a right to abortion. Maggie DeWitt of Iowans for Life said, "That was even more extreme than Roe versus Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision legalizing abortion." These unelected judges concocted a supposed new constitutional right that no Iowan voted for, said Chuck Hurley of the Family Leader. "They effectively amended our Constitution. As a lawyer, I can tell you, judges aren't supposed to." The subcommittee received hundreds of written comments, Judiciary Committee Chairman Steve Holt said. However, no opponents of HSB 41 spoke at the hearing. That's because the lack of a mask mandate at the Capitol meant the public was forced to endanger their safety during a tumultuous and dangerous time in American history time to give in-person comments, Jamie Birch Elliott of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Iowa said at a news conference of abortion rights groups. "Let's call this what it is, an attempt to ban abortion in Iowa," Birch Elliott said. "The concern is not hypothetical," she said, "because Iowa lawmakers have introduced at least 70 bills over the past 10 years to limit access to abortion. This is one of the most extreme attacks in Iowa history," she added. If approved by voters, Birch Elliott said the amendment would lay the groundwork to ban abortion if Roe is overturned. The amendment holds the potential to return to the days of back-alley abortions and backroom abortions, added Connie Ryan of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. "It will, without a doubt, cause the death of Iowans," Ryan said. The proposed amendment now goes to the full Judiciary Committee. During a public safety subcommittee on HSB 9, Richard Rogers of the Iowa Firearms Coalition told lawmakers that the right to bear arms rises directly from the universally recognized right of self-defense. "Iowa should join 44 other states in adopting its own version of the Second Amendment," he said, "because those who have weaponized the courts to remove constitutional restrictions on government now refuse to accept court decisions making it clear that the constitutional limits government, not the people." He warned of efforts to pack the Supreme Court, turning it into a political tool or super legislature. Should this ever succeed, the need for state-level protections in the right to keep and bear arms will be critical, Rogers said. However, the requirement that attempts to limit gun rights be held to strict scrutiny makes it more likely courts will strike down public safety requirements such as background checks, concealed carry, and permit to purchase laws, said Charlotte Eby, representing Giffords, the organization founded by former Representative U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, who was wounded in a shooting. Statewide polling found support for gun safety laws, Eby said, including 86% favoring background checks. "We want to make sure those laws will remain in place," she said. Referencing the January 6 attack on the nation's capital and a recent shooting at a pro-Trump rally in Des Moines, State Representative Beth Wessel-Kreschel, Democrat of Ames, said Iowans are living in a divided world. "This amendment is going to help people turn to gun violence over and over again," she said. And that does it for today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Wednesday, January 20th. I'm your reader, Wally Helms. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website iowaradioreading.org anytime. Thanks for listening.
Are you among the millions of Americans living with chronic pain? If so, you may think prescription opioids are the solution. The truth is, the benefits of opioids are limited. Opioids only mask the pain. Opioids also come with serious side effects, ranging from nausea to withdrawal symptoms to overdose. As many as 25% of people who are prescribed opioids struggle with addiction. And those who are addicted to opioids are 40 times more likely to move on to heroin. No one wants to live in pain, but no one should put their health at risk to be pain-free. There is another choice, physical therapy. Physical therapists treat pain through movement and exercise, no warning labels required, and you get to be an active participant in your care. Choose to treat your pain safely. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist near you. This public service announcement is brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.